break.
In conversation with Dean on City Talk 105.9.
And in this hour, I'm in conversation with Councillor Warren Bradley, leader of the City Council. Good afternoon, Warren.
Afternoon, Dean.
I was just asking you there before we came on air. We all know that you are a firefighter, and you do have your duties as a councillor and as leader of the council. How do you juggle those two things together?
I think the fire service has been very supportive in my role as leader of the City Council, and you've got to time manage your role. I'm still operational at Toxteth Fire Station, riding the wagons round. And I've always said I wanted to stay doing that because it's so easy in this role as leader of the council to forget where you've come from, to forget the people that elect you. And I think it's good, you know, when I do turn up to do a home fire risk assessment, you see people double take and they say, I know you from somewhere. And then one of the lads who I work with will say, he's your leader of the council. Have you got any moans, you know, any groans? And they'll give me problems and I'll deal with them, you know, and we move on. But I enjoy both jobs. I always said, you know, if I stopped enjoying being leader of the council, then I'd give up. And how can you stop being leader of the city when it's moving forward the way it is at the
moment? Any danger that you could become exhausted and not give of your best to either?
Well, people always talk about that, but I'm relatively still quite young. I used to be able to say I'm still young, but I'm relatively still quite young. I'm fit. And as I say, it's the adrenaline invariably carries you through because you see the difference you're making, not only as a firefighter, a fire officer in Merseyside, but also as leader of the council, because a lot of things have been implemented that I really believed in, you know, and there's a lot of work being done on policy at the moment where people have come to me and said to me, can you do this? Because it really will make an impact on everybody in the city, not just, you know, the city centre or wherever. So that's been important for me.
Now, this past week, I've seen you on a couple of occasions. Once when you were plunging the plunger down at Liverpool One, I was in the crowd there, which was a great occasion. And the other night at the convention centre for the awards ceremony down there for the community awards. So is your diary always full?
It is, yeah. And, you know, at times me wife and me children say, Dad, we never see you. But they understand that it's not, you know, forever that this will happen, and they invariably come with me whenever I go to events, to, you know, the Open Liverpool One last week, the family were with me. But it's great because, you know, you mentioned Liverpool One last week, which is the future of Liverpool for many, many generations. But then the community awards that we were at together on Tuesday evening, it's so important because they're the unsung heroes, really, who are finally getting recognised. So, you know, hats off to everybody. And you've got to be able to, as leader of the council, divide your time equally amongst the visionary stuff that you've got to do for the future generations, but also about the people who are doing stuff at the moment.
Take you back a few weeks. Couple of hairy moments. The first one must have been the night of the local elections. Were you a bit worried that night?
Well, that's why you're in politics, isn't it? You know, politics can throw up all sorts, and that's the edginess of it.
Was there a possibility that you could have lost that night?
Well, me personally, I won with a massive majority again in the Waverty ward that I represent. But of course there was. There's always that possibility. And it's a wake-up call that for any politician. You know, you look nationally at Gordon Brown. At the moment, people are putting real pressure on him, not only because of the economy, but because of some of the other things that the governments have done that people perceive to be wrong. And I think the analogy that politicians stop listening is easily dealt with by the ballot box.
By the ballot box, and over the last few years, the Lib Dems in Liverpool have consistently been losing seats, haven't they? So that must be worrying for you as leader. You know, how are you going to reverse that trend? But more importantly, why do you think you've lost those seats?
I think we've gone through a real period of transition over the last few years. We were talking about it 4 or 5 years ago, and when the all-ups happened in Liverpool, the Lib Dems won an awful lot of seats in the city. I think they won 60-odd seats, which is over two-thirds of the council. We knew that a lot of those seats wouldn't always remain Lib Dem seats because they are, as we call them, some naturally Labour wards in the city. That said, the last 2 years have been particularly difficult. You know, we've had not only the issues around the personnel of the council, but we've also seen the city turned upside down with regeneration. And that frustrates the life out of me, and I'm sure it frustrates the life out of the residents of the city as well.
But things like the Big Dig, people know that, you know, we're almost coming to the end of it now. You go down onto the Strand is about to look magnificent and will be magnificent when it's finished. But those sort of things, Warren, people know that they will pass.
They do.
You know, they are not the cause. They're not the symptoms of what's at the core of what is wrong, why people are not happy across the city.
No, I think it is. I think the feel of if they can't get from A to B quick enough. And I know a lot of people I work with in Toxteth, live in the north end of the city, have to travel along the Strand. And I know how many times they've been frustrated by traffic jams, by having to take a detour, by having to go on the rail system when they're on the pushbike because it's too dangerous. And that's because of the transitional period we've been in. Liverpool went without for 30 or 40 years. And I think, you know, the infrastructure had to be changed. And I think we're getting to the end of it now. People have at last again got a spring in the step because they can see everything falling into place. But there's still lots of challenges out there, Dean. You know, people who live in Kirkdale and Everton, people who live in the eastern fringe of the city, still have got many challenges that have got to be dealt with. The inner core, the housing market renewal, it's finally showing some light at the end of the tunnel for some areas. But for others, there's still a long way to go. It's a 15 to 20 year programme. And unfortunately, you raise the expectation and people expect it to be delivered overnight. And I know I'm frustrated by it because when you're on the wagons, on the fire engines, you're actually turning out into the inner core that's affected by the housing market renewal. And I get so frustrated when I see, you know, the conditions some people are still having to live in.
So once the big dig is all finished and it's all over and done with, what will you rely on then? What excuse will you use then?
There'll be no excuse because it's about an evolving city moving forward. You know, yesterday we announced the Shanghai Expo, the World Expo in China in 2010. Liverpool is the only other UK city outside of London that's been announced as having an exhibition space there. You know, we beat 120 world cities to that exhibition space. So it's great news for the city. 80 million people will visit Shanghai to look to invest. That's the future of this city. At last, we've got the ability and the confidence to go out and bring people to the city. And people say, yeah, but what will that mean for me? Well, it'll mean an awful lot for people who are members of families of third and fourth generation unemployed. You know, and people say you've got to break that chain. But it's not easy to break the chain when you've got unsustainable employment. And that's what Liverpool's had for so long. And I think we've turned that corner now and we have got a real opportunity.
Take us back to the beginning then. Your roots, where did it all start for you in Liverpool?
Well, I was born in Wavertree, live in the house now. That was my father's house and my grandfather's house. And I went to school locally. And interestingly, I met a girl from Kirby and she moved to Wavertree.
Oh, there must be a bit of a heated debate going on in your house at the moment there, but we'll come on to that. Go on, I interrupted you.
As I say, I went to school at Mossbit and I went to the Holt. I've never moved from there. I've always loved the area. I moved for probably 2 or 3 years. I went to live in Highton for a bit. I've served at Highton Fire Station for a bit. And me and my wife Pauline lived in Highton for about 2 years before we moved back to Wavertree.
And what sort of life was it like growing up? Politics was in your family with your mum and dad, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. My dad worked in Fords and then, on the buses and then in Fords. And my mum had her own businesses. We had small shops in the city, in Wavertree and Egbeth. And it was in the family, but my family got involved in politics because Cyril Carr, who was the councillor in Wavertree many, many years ago.
His brother was my teacher at Alderwood County Primary School, by the way.
Was he?
Just thought I'd throw that in. Ernest Carr, yeah.
Well, Cyril Carr was did something for my grandma, who lived in Wavertree Gardens. He took up an issue for her, resolved it. My mum and dad said, well, you've done something for us, so we'll give something back. You know, is there anything we can do? And they started delivering leaflets just in our road. And it went from there. My dad ended up being David Alton's agent when he was elected in the by-election in 1978. And my mum and dad were both elected to the council, firstly for the Melrose ward. My dad was elected, which is North Liverpool, but my mum was in Picton Ward, which was Wavertree up to Smithdown Road, Edge Hill area.
And which party were they in?
They were both in the Liberal Party then. And then on the inception of the Liberal Democrats, they moved over to the Liberal Democrats. And I was always involved, but never wanted to be in frontline politics, always wanted to be, you know, at the back, pounding the pavements, dealing with the campaigning. And then Mike Storey said to me, I always remember at my daughter's christening, don't you fancy it? Because I always said I'd only represent the area that I live in because you know the community well, you know the people. And then Mike Storey said, well, there's a seat coming up because one of the other councillors was leaving the city in retirement. So we considered it. He said, if you don't like it, you can stand down after 6-12 months. So I stood. Got a big majority because a lot of people do know me in the Waverley community. And, you know, that was in 2000, and here we are today. Who'd have thought, leader of the council 8 years on?
And what made you become a firefighter? Where did that come from?
I wanted to join the RAF, to be fair, when I was at school. I always wanted to be in the RAF, and because one of my eyes is weaker than the other, I wanted to be a pilot, and one of my eyes is weaker than the other, that wasn't to be. And I started working in the council when I'd finished my exams, quite ironically. And it didn't suit me sitting behind a desk, pushing a pen. It just wasn't something for me. And I always remember seeing an advert for firefighters. So I decided that I'd apply. And as they say, the rest is history. And I've absolutely thoroughly enjoyed my time as a fire officer, firefighter.
So is that something you've done all of your working life?
It is, yeah. As I say, I did a couple of years with the council. But then I went into the fire service, and it's great. It's changed dramatically. You know, I was talking this morning.
So where are you based out of, or maybe you don't want to reveal that?
No, I'm based out of Toxteth.
Toxteth,
yeah.
Right,
I've served in three stations on Merseyside. I served in St. Helens when I first came out to training, and then I moved to Heighton.
Where is the Toxteth? I'm still just trying to place it.
High Park Street, by the Mecca Bingo.
Oh, yeah, I know.
At the back of the Mecca Bingo.
Right, yeah.
So I've been served at St. Helens, Heighton, and I moved to Toxteth, and my dad said it was crackers, and I've got to say it's a fabulous community. You know, it's a great community, and the way it's regenerated over the 14 years I've been there is remarkable.
I'm talking to Councillor Warren Bradley in conversation with this hour. If you have a question you'd like me to put to him, you can email dean@citytalk.fm. This is City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
City. Every Friday at 12, our financial expert Ian Haworth from Parker Kelly Financial Services will be live in the studio to answer all your financial questions. So if you need advice on anything from mortgages and pensions to credit card debt, give our expert a call on 0151 708 1059 or email us surgery@citytalk.fm. For free expert advice, listen to the City Surgery weekdays at 12. We're here to help.
City Talk 105.9.
On average, every person in the UK throws away their own body weight in rubbish every 7 weeks. By recycling just one more thing, a glass jar, cardboard box, can, or even your old kettle, you're helping to reduce what we send to landfill, create new products and resources, and make Merseyside and Halton a greener place. To find out how you can recycle one more thing in Merseyside and Halton, log on to merseysidewda.gov.uk or contact your local council. Go on, feel lighter, recycle one more thing. A Swift business story. Dave's got business documents to sign, and Dave's documents are on the desk in his office in Bootle, but Dave's away doing business in Derby. Thanks to a Swift Dispatch same-day delivery, Dave can do business in two places at once.
When it comes to business-to-business deliveries, Swift Dispatch is quick, reliable, and secure. Call 0845 241 6666 now, or visit swiftdispatch.com. Swift Dispatch, the award-winning courier service you can rely on.
I feel really safe here, and I still enjoy my independence.
It's nice to be part of a community, and I'm with my friends, and everything I need is close by.
Gorslands Court in Egberth is a purpose-built community for older people. We've 53 apartments in landscape gardens offering communal dining and lounge areas, and our staff are on hand 24/7 to help you enjoy your retirement. So if you or someone you know is of retirement age, visit our open day on Saturday the 7th of June. Find out more. Call 0151 727 2525. Choose independence. Choose Gorslands Court.
Under the Data Protection Act, your company could be at risk if you don't dispose of personal information securely. If your business deals with confidential information, you need Planet Recycling. As one of the Northwest's largest data destruction providers, Planet are fully licensed to shred and dispose of data securely and cost-effectively. Is your company protected? For a free survey, call 0151 922 6668 or click planetrecycling.co.uk.
This is The Sullivan Show
with Dean Sullivan
on City Talk 105.9. In conversation with Dean on City Talk 105.9.
My special guest this hour is Councillor Warren Bradley, leader of the council. You mentioned there, Warren, in such a short time from, the beginning of your political career to becoming leader, meteoric rise, really.
It was really, yeah. Some say a little bit too soon, but I think it was good to do it, you know, at that time. And I've come in with some new ideas. I've got the business community right on board now. All the other partners right across Merseyside are on board. And it's going really well at the moment. You know, the cross partner working, the working with the private sector is really paying dividends.
What is it about local politics? Because I was approached, chatted to about maybe possibly standing in an award in Liverpool and Merseyside. And I was talking to a friend of mine. They said, well, why would you want to do that? Because getting people coming knocking on your door saying, why hasn't my bin been emptied? Or why aren't you moving that dog muck from in front of my gate? But there must be more to it than that.
I think everybody's got a part to play in the community that they live, and that was ultimately why I wanted to be elected, to make a difference. You know, I walk around Waverley, so you go and pick the kids up from school, or go out with the junior football team of a weekend, and people come up to me with issues. If I go for a pint with Pauline, people come up to me with issues. But at the end of the day, I want to try and help the people who feel that I need to help them. You know, it's not very often people come and rap me door down with complaints. It's very rarely they phone me at home. If people only phone the elected member if they feel they've got a real issue that they can't resolve.
Is that what it is, what local politics is all about? Is that the attraction of it?
No, I wanted to make Liverpool better. I remember, you know, as an 18, 19-year-old, I'd seen what the city had gone through. I saw friends of mine leaving the city because there was absolutely no opportunity. And I always thought that there's got to be more to the city than this. You know, the population was falling. A lot of my friends left school without education attainment, without exam results. And I just thought, well, you know, somebody's got to get in there who's doing it for the right reasons. And I'm not saying people haven't been there before for the right reasons. But I just think you've got to have a very common sense approach sometimes to the city, to what's happening in the city. And you've got to be a good listener. And I do try to listen to people. I do try to take on board the feelings of people. And whenever I've got an opinion on something, I always put it forward as an opportunity to have a discussion about it. Not that this is what Warren Bradley wants to do and bang, that's the end of it. You know, it's about, let's have a grown-up discussion about the pros and the cons around the whatever the issue is of the day.
Well, you were talking there about, you know, what's happening in the city. Let's bring it bang up to date. The stadium's in the news, you know. You are a self-confessed Evertonian. It's, you know, it's out in the public domain, has been for a while. This is all a fiasco, isn't it? What's going on with the stadium?
No, this is part of the planning process. That's all Liverpool City Council did yesterday, as we do with any large planning development in any other local authority that's quite close to us. And this is what the independent consultant said who came in. They didn't come in with a brief. They were given a planning application as submitted. I've got to say,
What are the fears? What did they... I presume that they took into account all the proposals and so on, and then came up with what an idea of how it should move forward?
Yeah, it's all based around planning policy, and it's all numbers and figures and all of it. So basically what it's saying is they feel the scheme, the independent consultants who actually are retail experts in this field, have said that it's far too big, the development in Kirby, and around the regional spatial strategy and the unity development plan for Knowsley Borough Council, that Kirby never was on the radar, really. And now it's come from left field onto the radar. They just want clarification through the issues that they are concerns and issues that they've raised. And the planning committee, which I don't serve on, yesterday decided that they will put a formal objection forward.
And the concerns are what? That it will take, for example, a trade away from what the new Liverpool One, for example?
No, it's all about the sustainability of the city region and also the wider Northwest region. So the regional spatial strategy is a Northwest regional strategy. The urban unity development plan is a Knowsley plan, but they look at what Liverpool have got as well, and Sefton, West Lancs, and St Helens, and usually they each of the local authorities are stringent against what is to be delivered.
So any argument that the feeling that it'll be moved out of the city is just not to be listened to. That isn't got anything to do with it at all.
Now, the objections are all about policy, around policy. You can't object to something because in your mind you feel it shouldn't move out the city. They've got to be, you know, strong policy arguments if you're to submit an objection. And don't forget, this is going to go via the Secretary of State as well. So you...
Somebody did email a question, and it says, I'm just picking it out here, just over a week ago, he said, referring to you, Warren, that Liverpool City Council would oppose any planning application on the stadium. Why the about turn? He also stated that he had discussions with a proposed ground share with Liverpool. Why didn't Liverpool Council keep in talks with Everton after the failed King's Dock Stadium proposals, knowing that the club wanted to move? It seems the council bent over backwards for Liverpool's stadium move and ignored Everton's future requirements. Instead of trying to score political points, he should cut the crap. What we want to see are actions, how it would be a deliverable possibility in keeping the club in the city, with the council providing the same aid to Everton Football Club as they have with Liverpool Football Club. How would you respond to that? Well,
the most frustrating thing for me was the actual delivery of the King's Dock Stadium, which we see the arena there now, was £35 million from Everton Football Club. I wasn't the leader at the time, I wasn't that close to where I was dealing with the culture issues and the leisure and sport. And the biggest frustration, Dave Hickson summed it up for me. We were sitting at a dinner and he just said, before the end of last season, he said to me, you know, we'd be playing in the new stadium on the King's Dock now. That's the biggest frustration, if they'd have raised £35 million. But hindsight's a wonderful thing. It's about moving forward. And I have over the last, I've been leader for 2.5 years. And I have over that period of time been in dialogue with Everton Football Club, close dialogue, to find a location. And we've offered work around the redevelopment of Goodison Park. We've offered the Best Way site on Scotland Road, which I think is a superb site for the club, right in the heart of Everton, 10 minutes out the city centre on foot. So no worries about the infrastructure issues. We also talked to them around...
Would this be a shared stadium?
No, this is when we were talking about an independent Everton stadium, a new Everton stadium there. And we talked about Long Lane Industrial Estate, and we actually had some commercial partners on board with us.
Now, if the one in Kirby doesn't go ahead, because I know the Tesco, the proposal was the Tesco would be stumping up a huge chunk for the cost. Are Everton or would Everton be in any position whatsoever to be able to build their own stadium on their own?
Well, it's about Everton Football Club. We were a big commercial business bringing forward plans to the City Council. And in the dialogue that we've had, either in London or in Liverpool, we've always talked around, as Everton call it, a plan B. I've always wanted to be a plan A, but as the Everton directors and the Everton management have said, that the train is on the track, unfortunately. Plan A is Kirby. So I said, okay, but I'm going to carry on working away because I believe, you know, there is a resolution to keeping Everton in the city. And I still believe that. And I hope that at the end of the day, we can do it. My biggest concern is, owing to the economic downturn, the world economic downturn, is that neither club are going to be able or be in a position to build a new stadium. And a while ago, somebody mentioned the joint stadium to me and I said, well, if you were a business, a big commercial business like both clubs are, you would consider a joint stadium. And it is a consideration. And I would ask, you know, Everton Football Club and Liverpool Football Club to come to the table and maybe just have an informal discussion about the possibilities. If it's not going to go anywhere, well, then we'll put it to bed and we'll carry on ploughing the individual furrows to new stadia. But I also don't understand for the life of me, in a city that is as dense as Liverpool, because it is a very small city, really, in square meterage, why we would want two 70,000-seater stadiums or two 60,000-seater stadium or two large-capacity stadiums so close to each other, when we could actually build a Wembley of the North, a superb stadium, knowing the Olympic Games is coming to the country in 2012, knowing the FA are at the moment bidding for the World Cup in 2018. I just think it's...
But do you really believe, Warren, that two huge football clubs with two huge identities would really ever come together to share one stadium? That's not going to happen,
well,
is it?
Well, they did it in Milan, in the Southern Hemisphere. You look right across the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, that's the Spanish. We're talking about Liverpudlians here. Liverpool and Everton.
I mean, you know...
Can you really see the day coming when you would have one huge stadium accommodating those two teams?
Absolutely. I think that's a no-brainer, really. If we want to start winning things again as a city on the football pitch, and, you know, there's no getting away from it. Man U, Chelsea and Arsenal are pulling away from the rest of the pack now. And Liverpool are just behind the pack, admittedly. But if we want to start winning things again, I just think, you know, you've got to put your investment onto the pitch instead of it being in infrastructure and in a stadium and in bills.
Why has no pressure been put upon on Liverpool FC to actually get on with the plans and proposals that they first put forward when they took over the club?
Oh, there's continual pressure put on them through the legal teams of the council and North West Development Agency and the European funding, because there is money put in via North West Development Agency and European funding for the regeneration of Anfield Breckfield. It just saddens me that we're in a position, you know, where we are, that Liverpool have got some internal politics they've got to sort out. And it's now not only, you know, going out onto the terraces and there's real animosity amongst the supporters, but also the playing staff at times. You know, Steve Gerrard came out last year at some point and said something about how it was affecting the players on the pitch, which is sad when, you know, the internal politics of a club can affect what the club's actually there to do, and that's to play football.
Now, as far as the stadium's concerned, is it Knowsley Council who have a vote? Is it tomorrow?
On Monday. Knowsley's planning committee meet on Monday.
And they're probably going to do the same as what Sefton's done, aren't they? It's more than likely.
No, Knowsley. It's Knowsley's application. Sefton last night agreed to lodge a formal objection. Yeah, Knowsley's planning committee are the ones who will decide on the application.
So very, very, very briefly, because I want to move on, what do you think the outcome of that will be? Do you think there's going to be a public inquiry in the end of the
day? I believe that the Knowsley planning officers have put in for approval of the scheme, and then it's up to the Secretary of State. It will then be referred to the Secretary of State, who will either call it in for a public inquiry or agree to the approval of the application.
Okay, I want to take you back to the night of the local elections now. Now, Nadia Stewart, you know, she got you off the hook right at the last minute, didn't she?
Nadia, no.
Was that an ace up your sleeve waiting to be dealt?
We'd been talking to Nadia for a while. She was really saddened by the way she'd been treated by the Labour Party.
But she'd said that she told me on this show that, you know, she only decided right at the last minute to join you.
But we'd been talking, and when I went over to have a chat with her, actually in the week in the run up to the election, she said she'd think about it, and on the night she said yes. Only Nadia can tell you, but the things she said to me, you know, that she likes my style of leadership, she likes what I believe in, and she likes what the Liberal Democrats believe in. And to be quite honest, looking at Nadia's background, you'd never believe that, but she was really discontented with the Labour group, the Labour
Now,
Party.
If she hadn't have come over, albeit at the last minute, and we'd have been in a situation with a hung parliament, wouldn't we?
We'd have had a hung council, but the Liberal Democrats would have had 45 of the seats. Labour would have had 39, and then the others would have made up the difference.
What do you say to people who would say, well, that is no mandate to lead and to run the city?
It is a mandate, isn't it? It's over a four-year term of office that the elections are run, and the Liberal Democrats have still got more seats than any other party in the city, and we've got the majority, so we have got the mandate of the people. And you've only got to look at what we've done over the last 10 years, Dean. You know, look at the city now. You look out the windows when you're up here in the tower, you can see what a different city it is, and it's not just in the city centre. It's right throughout the city. I look at my daughter's school, Mosfet School in Wavertree. Before the Liberal Democrats took control of the city, there was acro props in the classrooms holding the water tanks in the roof. Now, how can you expect to teach primary school children in them facilities? We've built 18 brand new schools, primary schools in the city. We've redeveloped secondary schools. We're just about to embark on the biggest Building Schools for the Future programme in the UK.
But also lots of care centres are closed, lots of care homes.
What we're doing, we haven't closed any care homes as the Liberal Democrats. Prior to us coming into power, there was lots of care homes closed, and we questioned that. And the government policy is care at home, not care in care homes. And we've looked at the two respite centres that we've got, one at Leighton Dean and one at Bowler Street, following very, very poor inspection results on social care 3 or 4 years ago. Liverpool now is one of the best performing social care authorities in the country. And what the advice we received, we can relocate the services from the respite homes at Bowler Street, because they are respite. So that means they're not long-term care homes, they're respite homes. So it's for 2 weeks, either from hospital, or if families want to go on holiday, they can put their elder members of the family or younger members of the family into respite care while they go on holiday to give them a rest. They're being relocated to Sedgemoor and Benmore. So the services will still be provided And we are absolutely adamant that these services will remain, but in a different location. That is what the government policy tells us to do. So we're only doing what, you know, the government tell us to do, but we're not willing to close the in-house residential care that we've still got in three locations in the city. We've gone out, we've listened. You know, one of them I know particularly well, Granby Care Home in Toxteth. I've done a lot of work through the fire service there. And it was the last thing I could have ever envisaged doing. Not many local authorities in this country now provide in-house residential care. It's out in the private sector and they do it.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Sullivan Show with my special guest this hour, Councillor Warren Bradley, leader of the council. Now, it's coming up, it's looming, the Matthew Street Festival. What proposals, what measures have you put in place so that we don't have a repeat of last year's fiasco, for want of a better word?
Well, it's interesting. We just got an up-to-date report from the health and safety guys who did it last year and said we couldn't go ahead with the independent guys that said everything's in place, everything's going well, and the outdoor stages will form part of this year's festival. I've got to say I've worked particularly hard on Matthew Street this year because, as you know, I was on holiday last year when the announcement was made. And I've got...
Was that conveniently on holiday?
Well, some people may say that, but I knew absolutely nothing.
He shifts uncomfortably in his seat.
No, I've got a dead leg. I knew absolutely nothing about that, you know, and we've had the debates around that, but it's about this year's festival and making sure that we deliver a fabulous festival over Matthew Street.
And do you think it will be a fabulous festival?
Oh, I do, yeah. I mean, we've got six outdoor stages, but I've been far more involved than any leader of the council should ever be, I think, in events and festivals. You know, the Liverpool Sounds event at the weekend with Paul McCartney. I knew... Absolutely.
What does that mean? Does that mean? Did you get a free ticket?
Oh, you're joking. I got a few more grey hairs. But, you know, and all the way through the concert, everybody else is dancing and singing and jigging. And as leader of the council, because of the legacy of last year's Matthew Street Festival, I'm panicking till the last door closes and the last person goes home. You know, and should it be like that for the leader of the council? Of course it shouldn't. But I care about what happens in this city, and that did the city no good at all last year, and I'm going to make sure this year that the Matthew Street Festival is superb.
You're listening to Warren Bradley on The Sullivan Show with me, Dean Sullivan, with you up until 4 o'clock today here on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
If you're a homeowner or rent from a private landlord and receive certain benefits, here's some heartwarming news from Warmer Heating.
Under the government's Warm Front Scheme, you could claim £2,700 towards a new gas or electric heating system from Warmer Heating.
Even if you're not on benefits and you're 60 or over, you may still be entitled to a £300 rebate towards the repair or replacement of your current heating system.
Find out more. Call Warmer Heating free on 0800 377 7755 or visit warmerheating.co.uk.
Thursdays are alive after 5 in Liverpool City Centre.
Wear boots, Clayton Square, and we're open tonight for late night shopping. Remember, every Thursday the stores are all open till late, so come and join us tonight.
Thursdays are alive after 5 with the Business Improvement District, creating a cleaner, safer, vibrant city centre and City Talk 105.9.
You can't see your desk for paper. Packaging and cardboard are cluttering your workspace. Offices, warehouses, companies and shops, it's time to work cleaner, greener and smarter. Call Planet Recycling. As one of the Northwest's largest recycling service providers, Planet can offer cost-effective collection and recycling solutions. For free advice or an on-site survey, call 0151 922 6668 or click planetrecycling.co.uk.
Yesterday, I popped on my trainers, hit the streets, and asked a few buff-looking guys why they thought Gymophobics was a gym with a difference.
No idea.
Not sure.
Haven't a clue.
You see, Gymophobics are ladies-only gyms. No weight machines, no treadmills, no pressure. So get fit, lose weight, and find out about the Gymophobics 30-minute workout. Call into the Cunard Building, Pierhead, Liverpool, or phone 236-7222. Mention this ad and receive your induction for free. Gymophobics, women-only workouts. No sweat.
At Morrison's, buy any two cases of Carling, Stella, Grolsch, Beck's, Guinness, Bonington's, Carlsberg and Strongbow Cider for just £16.
Any two for £16?
That's very refreshing. Morrison's, much more for your money. Offer applies to selected cases. See in store for details. Maximum 6 cases per person. Please drink responsibly.
A Swift story. Mary's Jodie's nan. Mary lives in Speke. Jodie lives in Newcastle. Jodie loves football. Mary loves the internet. Today is Jodie's birthday. Yesterday, Mary bought a footy kit online. Today, thanks to Swift Dispatch and to her mum's horror, Jodie's wearing it to a party.
For next day deliveries, Swift Dispatch is affordable, reliable and secure. Call 0845-241-6666 now or visit swiftdispatch.com. Swift Dispatch, the award-winning courier service you can rely on.
This is The Sullivan Show
with Dean Sullivan
on City Talk 105.9. In conversation with Dean on City Talk 105.9.
Yes, I'm in conversation with my special guest this hour, Warren Brantley. Had an email. Could you please ask our council leader why it is that whenever a culture employee gets relieved of their duties, it is automatic that they should get some sort of extravagant payoff, regardless of whether they are any good at what they did. I'm sure if most people do their jobs badly, it's just a case of getting the sack. It seems as though these people are being rewarded for poor work and given an easy way out.
Well, I knew what a question around this had come up. Obviously, it's down to the personnel and the legal terms of the contract that they sign at the time. And I think that that's what it was about with the some of the culture employees that have moved on to pastures new.
But you can understand why the people of Liverpool get upset and angry at this.
I can understand the frustration of it, of course.
Hundreds of thousands of pounds we're talking about, aren't we?
Well, it's not something that I know about because I don't earn that sort of money as a fire officer or leads of the council. But at the end of the day, the personnel, human resource side and the legal side of the council come to an agreement with an employer, former employees now, and that is the ways of the world. I mean, we see all the time, you know, I'm not saying it's right, that the chief executive of British Gas gets £7 million payoff because he's made a massive gaffe, you know. Is it right or is it wrong? And I'm not saying that any of the culture staff made massive gaffes, but that's what it's all down to at the end of the day.
One of those payoffs is tied up with an investigation that's is tied up with this investigation by the Standards Board. Mm. When are you expecting any sort of a say one way or the other from them?
I don't know. It could be today. It could get home tonight. There'll be a letter there. I'm not saying there will be, but I submitted my file, rather large file of information to the Standards Board in February. I've had a chat with them since, and I'm just waiting for them to come back to me. But it's only the first phase of the Standards Board investigation. What they are saying, all the paperwork, is they are merely investigating an allegation. It's not guilty or not guilty. But what I would say is that I fundamentally believe I've done absolutely nothing wrong in this. Politics is a dirty game, and in Liverpool particularly dirty. And over the
Lib Dems were accused of dirty tricks during the run up to the local elections, weren't they?
In Liverpool, I don't think so, Dean.
Really?
No,
find that hard to believe.
Politics is politics, unfortunately, you know, and you do get embroiled in it, and people make allegations about other people. But what I've tried to do through all of this, no matter what mud's been slung, is get on with the job of making Liverpool better. And you look at, you know, I was integrally involved in the opening events for Capital Culture, the Arena and Convention Centre, integrally involved for the last 5 years on Liverpool One, right at the heart of the Liverpool Sounds concerts. As I said, I'm right at the heart of the Matthew Street stuff. So I'll place on record my record of delivering in the city. Look at the sports centres we've delivered, look at the libraries, look at the culture programme that's been brought together. You know, I was involved in all of that. So I'm reasonably content with my role in the city.
Suggestion was made to me, I don't know how true or if there is any truth in it, that the Standards Board's already made up its mind in your favour.
I haven't got a clue. I wouldn't know.
If it goes against you, will you have to resign?
No, I'll be appealing against any decision because, as I say, I don't think I've done anything fundamentally wrong. As leader of the council, you don't absolve yourself of an opinion. You are still entitled to an opinion. And I did have an opinion over issues, particularly around Matthew Street and the way some of the programme was being pulled together. And I will always have an opinion, not only as leader of the council, but as a council taxpayer of this city. And my opinions invariably come from maybe in the pub, I'm having a pint and somebody will come over, or I'm in work, working with the guys I work with, and they've all got opinions and they feed me information, or just general punters in the street coming to me and saying, Warren, we don't think this is right. Will you have a look at it? I am entitled then to go and have a look at it. And I am not carrying out, well, I'm not carrying out my role as leader of the council if I don't go and have a look at it, because it's been passed to me by somebody.
Now, your leadership was challenged recently. You were successful to remain a leader of the council. But does that suggest that there are some divisions amongst the Lib Dems and the Lib Dem Party in Liverpool?
No, up and down the country, on the same night as I was re-elected as leader of the council, there was challenges to leaderships, and people are entitled, if they're members of the political party, to challenge the leadership. I always remember Gideon Bentovin, who was the leader of the Labour Party, when Joe Anderson challenged him. And Gideon, three or four nights previously, had won six seats off the Lib Dems. And he was challenged to the leadership by Joe, and Joe became the leader of the Labour Party, and that is politics and that's democracy.
Do you feel you've got a broad support?
I believe I've got 100% support of the Lib Dem group now on Liverpool City Council. I think it was good. It was good for me, to be fair, Dean, that we had that election, and it was good that I came through on the first ballot with well over 50% of the vote.
Now, you come through that, you won that, and the next thing you're coming out with, you want to get back to basics.
Yeah.
Right. Who was the last one who said back to basics? Look what happened to
John
him,
Major.
John Major,
yeah.
I don't know. He ended up being drummed out of office almost.
I think back to basics.
What do you mean by that?
I think it's about listening again. I said that politicians so easily forget to listen to people, so easily forget to deliver the big, you know, the big issues that make a difference to people, and that is clean streets, good schools, nice parks, good sports centre, libraries, and the issues that housing is a big issue, you know. And these are the issues that we've got to deliver, and I believe we are delivering, you know. I'm not even thinking about, there's a far few people now come forward and say, my bin hasn't been collected, or this hasn't been done, the park hasn't been cut. That doesn't happen so much in Liverpool now, but we've got to ensure that we don't drip back into the way it was. So that's the basics that I was talking about. It's about delivering, you know, in North Liverpool, real tangible change to the people there. I look at Speke Garston and look at the investment that's gone in there over the years, and I think that we could mirror that in North Liverpool, but there's got to be the private sector engagement, and hopefully with Peel we've got that private sector engagement now, and we can really make some inroads with the enterprise growth initiative in that area. And what I've said to, you know, the officers, what I've said to partners is, come on, we've got a real opportunity, 22 million quid there, to make a difference in North Liverpool. Let's not waste this opportunity. Let's grasp it and let's move forward. And let's make a difference to some of the people's lives who haven't had that opportunity. I think Liverpool wants one opportunity. But I hear so often people saying, you know, local people can't get the local jobs in the building trade or whatever. That's because of the lack of skills. So it's about working with the community college, with Blackburn House, with a broader spectrum, but with the private sector as well. Because, and I'll use the analogy of me brother-in-law, I use this everywhere I go, people have probably heard it before. He was a young lad growing up in Kirby, 15, 16, and he was going to fall off the edge. He could have quite easily, you know, tottered off to commit crimes, but he met a girl, and he was offered a job as an apprentice scaffolder, 16, just leaving school, 15. He mightn't have even been 16, because but he was given that opportunity. He grasped that opportunity. He's now a time-served scaffolder, earning good money in his home city of Liverpool. And he's got a nice house, he's got a family, and he was given the opportunity. That's what I want to see. I want to see. But not only was he given the opportunity, he was mixing with a different person, a different type of person. So he became a model citizen. Because when he went on site, if he was said, make a cup of tea, he never said, get lost. He said, okay, how many take sugar? And it's about growing up. So you've got to mix when you get to a certain age. You've got to start mixing with people of different generations that will educate you and teach you how to live as a model citizen. And I think Philip is the perfect example of all that.
Notoriously, turnout in local elections is always low. And there's a general, you must appreciate this, there's a general dissatisfaction right across the board with politics, whether it be local or you know, national politics in the country. What can you do to reconnect with the man on the street, Joe Public, who generally are feeling even more so today, you know, when we're looking at across the board, prices going up for fuel and, you know, what's in your supermarket trolley, etc., etc. And people really thinking the politicians just don't care. Politicians just aren't listening. How'd you turn that around?
Well, look, for me, the proof of the pudding's in the eating. You know, I finished the day shift on Monday and I went straight to a residence group in Liverpool 15. And I sat in the front room of the residence houses talking about some of the antisocial behaviour problems that they've got. It's about having belief in the people that represent you, and then people become more engaged. You know, I look at some of the councillors that we elected this year. Linnie Williams, we elected in Mossley Hill. Linnie Williams has worked tirelessly for the young people in the Mossley Hill Garston Speak area for many, many years, and it's good to see her now taking the seats on the benches of the Liberal Democrats. She can really make a difference. I think you've always got to be connected with the people. I look at my ward. We get a pretty good turnout in our ward. I think we had about a 35% turnout in the Waverley ward. I think that is a legacy of me being connected very closely with the people that I represent.
Just had an email in here. We were talking earlier about the stadium. And she's saying, and talking about payoffs and so on. What, she says, what about the complete waste of £200,000 on the feasibility study of the ludicrous idea of emptying the Salthouse dock? Whose crazy idea was that? Also, the people of Kirby have the right to their own local amenities. Let Sefton sort themselves out. There will probably be a lot more jobs for the people of Kirby who've needed them for decades. Football stadia need their own identities. Would Warren like to share his council chambers with any other councils? I think not. That comes from Barbara in Halewood in Knowsley. Quick response to that?
Well, that's a personal opinion from Barbara. But the Salthouse dock feasibility was taken part, it all formed part of the Liverpool Sound. And that was information received from very, very high level promoters of pop concerts who thought it would be a good idea to do it. And the culture company management team decided to see if we could take it forward. And still, you know, Lee Ford, that's been interviewed on television, on radio on numerous occasions, thinks that that was a deliverable option. So it is about, you know, looking at some quite ambitious projects. And in the end, we decided that it was going to be financially out of reach. So we decided to move with the Liverpool football ground. And it was a great success. You know, let's not keep looking back. Let's look forward at the success it was. 36,000 people jigging to Paul McCartney.
One of the boards that you're involved with is Northwest Vision.
Yeah.
I've had an email from somebody asking, as chairman of the board of Northwest Vision, how do you and the other board members see that mission statement of Northwest Vision is carried out, with particular reference to the last paragraph, which reads, "We want an industry that is a magnet for talent, is truly diverse and creates opportunities for all." And it goes on to say, his personal response from Northwest Vision, when I've approached them over the last 3 years as an individual screenwriter and filmmaker, as a company and with feature film, short film and TV projects, is that, and it goes on to say, he's been told there's no category he can fit into. They don't reply when promising to do so. And he's going on, goes on to say he's an award-winning filmmaker. How do you support people like that who just feel that they're not getting any support?
Well, I'm not the chair of Northwest Vision. That's Steve Morrison's chair of Northwest Vision. I sit on the board and I'll take that away and I'll ask them. Obviously, I can't comment on individual issues. What I would say, you know, Cannes Film Festival about 2 weeks ago, Liverpool Short Films, Digital Departures, was highly accredited, and Terence Davis's short film has been awarded. So we can all look at individual cases, but there is lots of successes for some of the probably small failings of Northwest Vision, but I'll take that away with me, Dean, and deal with it.
I'll give you a print off it.
Cheers, yeah, thanks very much.
And now some new blood has come onto the council, and some would say you're giving positions in your inner sanctum or your inner cabinet to people, you know, who are still wet behind the ears. I'm referring in particular to a new councillor, Gary Miller, who's been given responsibilities for tourism and entertainment. I can't remember the title.
Enterprise and tourism, yeah.
Yeah,
it's crucial that I always believe that you put people there who are going to drive the city. And you look at what Gary's achieved over the last few years in Park Street Studios and some of the other businesses with the Linda McCartney Centre and that. He's done a tremendous job. And I just thought he offered something a little bit different as we move into the next phase of Liverpool, you know, and he's in touch with people at the grassroots level, and he's well known in the business communities, and that's what we've got to do. If we want to drive Liverpool to the next level, we've got to have some new blood in there making a difference.
Can't let you go without referring to the Auditor Commission, of course, and I quote from their report, 37-page report. Talking about what goes on in the council chamber, member behaviour at times is poor and affecting capacity. There has been inappropriate behaviour dealing with some officer issues. Information is sometimes leaked to the press and other sources for short-term political advantage. Behaviour of some members at council meetings is poor, with personally abusive language used and aggressive behaviour regularly demonstrated. What goes on down there at these council meetings? That sounds like a bunch of rowdy school kids.
And anybody knows the council chamber, it's always been the same, I think, for the last 30 years. That doesn't mean that it's the right way to behave. You've only got to watch Parliament, parliamentary question time, Prime Minister's question time, to see that. And it was a wake-up call, but, I stand by the idea that I brought the ethical standards review in the first year of my leadership, because I thought it was inappropriate the way some people spoke to officers and each other as members. You know, I think it's wrong that you can call people names across a council chamber when we're supposed to live in a very tolerant world and a very tolerant society. And we are the people, the elected members, who are supposed to portray tolerance to everybody. So I brought ethical standards in to have a look at it, and I knew that this was going to happen. So it's work in progress. It is only a minor few people, but I think they're aware of who they are, and I hope they'll change the way they behave.
The hour soon goes. I put you